Voice of the Cape Drive Time. Going places. Getting there.
91.3, welcome back to the show. As we focus on changing the narrative to counter violent extremism and terrorism in Africa, yes, it's here, there's also a need to identify concrete steps towards sustainable corporate engagement to strengthen resilience in areas affected by violent extremism. This will be explored tomorrow in a dialogue hosted by an organization called the Global Community Engagement and Resilience Fund, and they're based in Geneva. It is a public-private partnership and the first global effort to support community-level initiatives aimed at strengthening resilience against violent extremist agendas. In studio, live in person, in his shirt, is Dr. Khalid Khoza, who is Executive Director of the Global Community Engagement and Resilience Fund. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for the invitation.
The acronym, how do we say it for short?
GSERF is what we say. It's rather a clunky acronym.
GSERF. It's certainly much shorter than the full name.
Yes.
Now tell us, what was your motivation to found and create this organization? It's got a slightly different approach, hasn't it, to your traditional organizations that do interventions where there is violence and extremism.
Absolutely. Well, I didn't found the organization, although I was part of the process that set it up. It was founded by something called the Global Counterterrorism Forum, which is a state-led process with 35 member states at the moment. And the idea really arose from the recognition that many of the challenges we're facing really are located at local community level. Probably many of the solutions are within those communities, and those solutions need to be unlocked. And what is needed to unlock them is money. And so this is very much a fund. We're not about operations. We're not building wells or building schools or training people. We are providing funds to people who we think may have the answer. I think, as you said, we are doing something quite different from the traditional approach to this challenge of violent extremism. And I always think of this as a spectrum. At one end of the spectrum, you have military, security, intelligence responses. And of course, that's necessary. But I think we can all agree that that hasn't been as successful as perhaps some people would hope it had been. We're operating at the other end of the spectrum, which is the prevention end of the spectrum. Let's try to deal with people who are at risk of becoming violent and give them constructive alternatives before they become violent.
How effective, I mean, have you been able to do any interventions? Because I know a lot of people's ears are pricking up at this. It's not often that we talk about somebody being proactive. Normally, when you get extremism, it's always reactive, isn't it?
It is almost always reactive. And I think we all know it's necessary, but it's... if not a mistake, it's not part of a full solution. Now, we're a very new organization. We're still 3 or 4 months away from actually funding grants and giving out grants to local communities. But we're working at the moment on this continent in Mali and Nigeria, and we're in discussion with the Kenyan government as well. And we're in those countries setting up the process which will allow us to identify local communities that need this funding. And I think the point to make about these local communities is that we are trying to go beyond the usual suspects. We are talking about a group of 5 women who have an interesting idea in a small village in Mali, and what they need is $10,000 to launch their initiative. So it's not about giving to the traditional NGOs, it's about giving to communities that don't have the financial literacy, that don't have the experience, that don't have the access to money, but just need small grants to get things going.
It's very significant fact that you're mentioning small grants, because anecdotally, we find our experience as journalists going into these places that it sometimes does not take a lot of money to solve a problem. It is more a question of empowering the right people to do the right job.
Correct. And your experience as a journalist points that out, and as does many years of experience in the development world. We, I think, all know that if you overburden local communities, then that is sometimes not effective. That opens up the window for corruption and for misuse of money and for over-reliance. So our model is very much to provide small grants with some training to local communities to allow them to fill the funding gap themselves once our money is withdrawn. This is a startup process.
It's interesting you've mentioned, you know, for example, women in Mali. Not a lot of focus on women being solution solvers in these scenarios, and it's quite crazy in a sense, because women are the ones who are worst affected. They're on the coalface. They know the problems intimately.
Absolutely right. I often say to people that, and it's very clear when we visit these countries, the governments, the universities, the think tanks, nobody really knows what is driving young people to make a wrong decision. I think the mothers do, and the sports coaches, and the local church leaders, and so on and so forth. So it's really about speaking to them, empowering them, listening to them, and finding out what they think the solutions might be. So I think women's empowerment, absolutely fundamental.
Now, of course, you've mentioned Mali in Nigeria. I mean, Mali has basically fallen apart at the seams since Ansar al-Sharia, I think the name of the group, came in there and tore it apart. Nigeria, just yesterday on the show, we spoke to Amnesty International. We see that the Nigerian military is now also responsible for atrocities. So some heavy crisis-ridden places that you're starting off with.
Yeah, and a couple of reasons why. I mean, the main reason is that these countries, to their credit, have volunteered to be part of this process. This is, as you can imagine, a politically sensitive issue. We're an international organization. We certainly can't be seen to interfere or undermine national sovereignty or work off the horizon. So we're very much working directly with governments. We are asking governments to facilitate our process. The governments are receiving no money. The money is going to communities. And I think it's to the credit of Nigeria and Mali and several other countries that have shown interest that they're willing to do this. This is not about them receiving money. This is about us selecting projects in their countries and funding those projects. And of course, if this fund works properly, we should be focusing on prevention rather than necessarily in the communities where this is already a real challenge. It may well be that most of our money, for example, is spent in South Nigeria, where this problem hasn't yet been unleashed, but where there are communities at risk. So the prevention changes your perspective a little bit, I think.
Have you been quite impressed by the response that you've got, mentioning the fact that governments haven't asked for money? Because the traditional cliche about Africa is that if you go to Africa, a hand comes out and says, where is the money?
Yeah, and I spent many years in a different context working in Africa, and I certainly understand that cliche. But yes, I have been quite surprised and very pleased that the governments understand the process. Indeed, these governments are on our governing board, so they have part of the governance process as well. And they are willing to engage. As I say, this is a politically sensitive issue, working with local communities that may or may not support the government. The government is receiving no money. And I think it's to the enormous credit of the Malian and Nigerian governments in this case, and hopefully more in Africa soon, that they're willing to engage with us. I think that sends out a positive message about Africa and its willingness to engage in this seriously.
Are you finding that, for example, you go to a village in Mali and you go to a town in Nigeria, that the people there have different solutions, different ideas? So you can't come in there and say one size fits all, because people do change from region to region, different perspectives, different outlooks.
And over time. I think one village might have an answer today that's different in 6 months' time. Our process is about a bottom-up approach. We are asking communities what they think the problems are, what they think the solutions are, and then we will fund them. It's not about us prescribing at all. So if you were to say to me, what sort of projects do you expect to fund in 6 months? I could hazard a guess: women's empowerment, education, sports, development. But frankly, I don't know. And that's the excitement of this. And hopefully when I come back on your radio station in a year and tell you about some of the projects we're funding, some you'll have been able to predict and some will be completely surprising to you.
No, we look forward to that. And I mean, I think as Africans, we are actually quite excited to see initiatives like this. In fact, there aren't enough of them. I don't have to tell you, most times it's from top down, somebody coming in and saying, okay, you do it this way or else. And that becomes an antagonistic situation of aid.
I agree. And I think, frankly, the international community has recognized that its approach to this issue of extremism, terrorism, hasn't worked. It's been heavy-handed, it's been top-down, it's been reactive, as you say, and I think it's generated a great deal of resentment in Africa and the Middle East and other parts of the world where we're working at the moment. So this really is a response to that, to the mistakes made in the past. We need a comprehensive approach, and yes, again, military, security, fine, but let's also listen to communities, provide them funding, and work on prevention, and that is part of the answer, I think.
Now, something that's coming out of the statements and sort of goals that you've got, you talk about corporate engagement, engagement with business, engagement with the private sector, traditionally extremism, terror, anti-state versus the people versus the state, all those kind of dimensions. Again, quite interesting, if not revolutionary, to see that you are prepared to engage the private sector. What motivates that idea?
I mean, we were explicitly established as a public-private partnership. So from top to bottom, the private sector is involved. As you have alluded to, I must admit, a year ago when I started in this position, I wondered how successful we'd be with the private sector. I think the private sector is often nervous, especially when you use words like terrorism. This is not a language or an area that the private sector is necessarily willing to engage in. But I've been very pleasantly surprised. And one reason I'm here in Cape Town is for the World Economic Forum. The private sector I think, gets it. The private sector wants to invest in new markets, and violent extremism makes those markets inaccessible. The private sector wants access to pools of talent, and violent extremism takes away those talented people. Violent extremism can disrupt supply chains. Violent extremism means it's difficult for businesses to make money. So there's a very clear business model. They want stable, secure economies so they can make money in them, and that's not an unreasonable motive.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So, I mean, for example, I mean, do you get a significant amount of your funding from the private sector? For example, obviously, you're not a politician, so I'm not going to sort of pull a gun to your head, where's the money kind of thing. But, I mean, do you get a significant amount of your funding from the private sector?
Not yet. All of our funding, and I can tell you, for an organization that's 6 months old, we've already raised $25 million. So I think that's a good start. I'm very pleased with that. And that's from 10 governments around the world. The private sector has been immensely supportive, in-kind contributions, expertise, providing us with networking and access to business leaders and so on and so forth. But I think it's unrealistic to expect yet the private sector to give us large amounts of money. But who knows, in 3 or 4 years, I think the private sector will start coming in with financial contributions as well.
How have you found the World Economic Forum so far, early days? I mean, have you managed to do some good networking, some successful lobbying in terms of your idea?
Yes, I mean, firstly, the World Economic Forum itself is taking this issue really quite seriously. There's a new strand of work within the World Economic Forum focusing on some of these more security-oriented issues. And of course, if you look at the big themes that are being discussed right now in Cape Town, it's about economic growth. Well, clearly, violent extremism can stop that. It's about the demographic challenges in Africa. Clearly, that's related to countering violent extremism as well. So the work that we're doing, I think, fits quite naturally in the World Economic Forum's agenda. So I'm very pleased that the World Economic Forum is taking us, our organization, and our topic seriously. Equally, yes, as you know, the World Economic Forum really is about networking. And we've had lots of opportunities to meet business leaders who are engaged with us, who we hope will further engage with us. And it's been a very useful networking experience.
From GSERF's viewpoint, you know, you're in South Africa. You're also having a dialogue tomorrow. Tell us the commercial side of the interview. Tell us something about the dialogue that you're hosting tomorrow.
Well, it's a rather informal setting, but our hope is to engage with, again, mainly private sector stakeholders. We've invited a number of CEOs and other senior people who, of course, you'd expect to be here because of the World Economic Forum. And really, it's going to be a discussion around some of the things that you and I have spoken about, that let's understand each other's language and vocabulary. Let's understand why there's a business case to be made to make sure that we get this stuff right. Let's find out what you as a member of the private sector can bring to the table. Because I think there's two things about the private sector. Firstly, I think they have skills to bring to the table. And secondly, they have a vested interest to get this right. So I really want to open up a space to have a constructive, honest, critical discussion with the private sector and to find out how we can meet their needs and engage with them.
Looking in the long term, are you looking, if you have some successes in Africa, seeing whether the model can be applied in other parts of the world where we have some conflicts that are just never ending?
Absolutely. This is a global fund. We're already working in Bangladesh. We are, as I said, in discussion with the government of Kenya. We are speaking to Indonesia and Myanmar and various other Asian and Southeast Asian countries as well. What we're not going to do is work in the richer parts of the world, even though, let's be honest, in London and Paris, there are also challenges of violent extremism at the moment. And the reason is because our model is to fill a funding gap. Mm-hmm. We are going to places where we think money is needed. And I think those are largely in the poorer parts of the world. We're also going to the places where this is the most pressing challenge. And I think certainly far more people are dying from violent extremism in sub-Saharan Africa than they are in Europe. And so we're trying to focus on where the challenge really is and where the funding gap exists.
What is the response when you go on the ground? Let's say, for example, you go to Mali, very poor country, you meet a group of women and you tell them, listen, we can help you, because for a poor person, even $1 is a lot of money. $1 does actually make a difference. You know, we're kind of quite flippant about it. Are the responses heartwarming when you go to these areas and start saying, we can help you?
I mean, part of the challenge here is really, I mean, that's why we discussed that the name of the organization at the start of this interview, it's a clunky name, the Global Community Engagement and Resilience Fund. Part of the challenge here is to engage communities, because communities are untrusting. They sometimes don't trust the government. They are wary of the international community. They certainly are nervous about the so-called global war on terror. So a lot of this is about building confidence with those communities. And I think that's been part of our success, is really developing trust within the countries where we're working. If we can get that right, then I think that really opens the door.
Yeah, I mean trust is a big word. In fact, I would put it in the upper case. In fact, do you find it's quite amazing that when people do start to trust you, how overwhelming it can actually be as an experience.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're not quite at the level of working directly with projects. We're still a few months away from that. But even working in capital cities and working with government and civil society and private sector, I found their levels of engagement, their recognition of how critical this issue is, yes, very heartwarming. I think I think there's a recognition that this is a challenge, that it's not insurmountable, and that if we come together, we can find a solution.
Do you think that sometimes the outside world underestimates the capacity of people in Africa to understand Africa's own problems, and that sometimes the reason you hear is simply just a question of empowerment? One doesn't have the resources to do something about something that one knows is the problem.
I think you're right, I think it's true of Africa and many other of the poorer parts of the world as well, that for a long time the international community and the outside world has assumed that they have the answers and Africa is simply here to receive the wisdom. And I think that's clearly wrong. And this is a great example of where the wisdom lies with communities, with the mothers, with the people we're speaking about. Let's listen to them, let's empower them, let's give them small grants, let's let them try to find solutions.
Dr. Khaled Khoza, who is the Executive Director, I'm going to give the full name, Global Community Engagement and Resilience Fund, GSERF for short, a public-private partnership, and the first global effort to support community-level initiatives aimed at strengthening resilience against violent extremist agendas. In other words, working from the bottom up, which in Africa is certainly very welcome. Dr. Khaled, thanks for talking to us, and everything the best. Enjoy Cape Town.
Thank you very much.